minded herd.
Yeah.
Because more and more, you know, I think people do know what's what. You know, they're not stupid. They may be idiots, but they're not stupid.
I think there's a thing with Les Dawson. I've been a fan of Les Dawson all my life. I'm reasonably educated. But I've found some of the monologues I struggle with in knowing what all the words mean and knowing all the different things, but I can follow it perfectly well. In the sense that when Shakespeare's done well, it doesn't matter if you don't get it 100%, you will follow it. And I think there was something very accessible about Les Dawson.
And who was it? There was some politician in just after the war who would leave big words in.
Right.
You know, and trouble, you know, bears of small brain like me who find, you know, long words bothersome.
Yeah.
But the fact, within the context, in fact, you lift people to saying, that's a good word, that does describe that, because there's enough around it to give you the idea of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And so you learn a new word that's always a lovely way of, you know, saying, that's a shortcut to saying what I mean.
Well, I definitely learnt the word asinine and asininity from Les Dawson. And that was from, I can say exactly what it was.
That's when things sound like they rhyme, but they don't, right?
That's exactly... It was when he took over Blankety Blank.
Yes.
And he said, I think it was one of his opening monologues, or certainly one of the very, very early shows, where he said he was going to lift the show from the level of asininity that it had previously been at under Wogan.
A soupçon of culture for the deprived rustics, the yokels. A brief breath of the immortal bard.
I see. Do you think the villagers will appreciate Shakespeare, sir?
Ah, well, you see, I present it in an original and eye-catching way. And now, for your delight and delectation, I will demonstrate my theatrical versatility whilst I recite Mark Antony's famous valediction to the Roman throng from Julius Caesar. At the same time, I will keep these six plates spinning on the tops of those poles, placed strategically in the stage. Thank you, maestro. Friends, Roman and countrymen, lend me your ears. I come to bury Caesar, not to praise him. The evil of men do lives after them. The good is sure if it's churned with their bones. So be it with Caesar. Oh, cobblers.
Ray Peacock chats to his special guests and introduces rare Les Dawson routines, interviews and programmes from the BBC archive in Listening to Les. If you missed it, you can catch up online at the 4Extra website.
BBC Radio 4Extra.
3 o'clock, Wes Butters with a captivating drama next on 4Extra, don't go anywhere else. And from 4, a short story that tells of a real experience on the night of the Roswell incident in New Mexico, when the US government allegedly covered up an encounter with aliens. And following that, Emma Fielding and Jim Norton star in Nick Warburton's haunting play, Mustard Seed, at 4:15. Now, a great American classic. Set on the high seas, the story takes place in the 19th century, at a time when hundreds of ships and thousands of men hunted whales. It's also the tale of one man's obsession, the ultimate adventure story for anyone who's ever longed to escape, and the ultimate cautionary tale of why you ought to just stay at home.
Episode 1 of Moby Dick by Herman Melville. Adapted for radio by Steph Penny.
Call me Ishmael. Some years ago, never mind how many, having nothing in particular to interest me on shore, I thought I would sail about a bit and see the watery part of the world. Whenever it is a damp, drizzly November in my soul, whenever I find myself pausing before coffin warehouses and bringing up the rear of every funeral I meet, and especially when my devils get such an upper hand that it requires a strong moral principle to prevent me from stepping into the street and knocking people's hats off, then I account it high time to get to sea. I suppose you are landsmen, of weekdays pent up in lath and plaster, tied to counters, nailed to benches, clinched to desks. I reckon if you but knew it, most of you cherish the same feelings towards the ocean. So it was one freezing Saturday night in December that I arrived on the island of Nantucket, a shirt or two in a carpet bag my only luggage. I sounded my pocket and came up with so little that I walked waterwards, where the establishments become smaller and cheaper, until I came across a dim-lit, palsied old house whose sign had a poverty-stricken sort of creak to it. It read, "The Spouter Inn, proprietor Peter Coffin."
My grandpa's has just come in after 4 years at sea. Not a bed unoccupied.
Oh, well, is...
Unless you have no objection to sharing a harpooner's blanket, have you? I suppose you are going a whaling, so you'd better get used to that sort of thing.
Well, I don't like to sleep two in a bed, and if I ever do, I'd like to choose my companion myself.
Keep that door shut, shipmate! Turn us all to icicles!
Well, I suppose I might put up with half of any decent man's blanket. Is he here?
He ain't here now. He's out a peddling tonight. And I don't see what on earth's keeping him so late. Maybe he can't sell his head.
Can't sell his head? You're telling me that this man is peddling his head around town?
Yeah, and I told him he wouldn't sell it. The market is overstocked. Ain't there just too many heads in the world?
I've no notion of sleeping with a madman. And you, Mr. Coffin, trying to make me do so, render yourself liable to criminal prosecution.
Yeah, well, be easy there. This here harpooner has just arrived from the South Seas, where he bought up a lot of embalmed New Zealand heads. And he sold all of them but one. And that one he's trying to sell tonight, because tomorrow is Sunday. Well, it wouldn't do to be selling human heads about the streets when folks is going to church. Ah, look now, it's after 12. 'Tis Sunday. I reckon he's come to anchor. You won't see him tonight.
But sometime later, as I lay under the counterpane in that freezing room, the door opened and a figure came in. I resolved to feign sleep. But when he turned towards me, I nearly sang out. Such a face he had. In the candlelight, it was of a dark, purplish yellow, stuck over with large, blackish squares. And as he undressed, I saw that his chest and arms and legs were covered over with the same dark squares, and the only hair on his head was a small knot twisted up on his forehead. He took out a tomahawk, and before I could shout, he stuffed it with tobacco and lit it, before climbing into bed, on top of me.
Who the devil you? Speak out, dummy, or I kill you.
Landlord! For God's sake, Peter Coffin! Peter Coffin, help!
Speaky!
Help!
Speaky! Tell me who you be.
What on earth is the matter?
I can't sleep here.
Oh. Ah, I understand. Don't you be afraid now. Queequeg here wouldn't harm a hair in your head. Turn flukes again and go to sleep. Queequeg, look here. You sabby me, I sabby you. This man sleeps here. You sabby?
I sabby plenty.
Tell him to stash his tomahawk there or his pipe or whatever it is. I don't fancy a man smoking in bed with me. I ain't insured.
There. I finish. Get into bed.
Thank you.
I wish both of you gentlemen good night.
Well, good night. Queequeg? Did he say?
Queequeg. What's your name?
Ishmael.
If I had been astonished on first catching glimpse of so outlandish an individual as Queequeg, that astonishment soon departed. He was the son of a chief who had run away to sea, wanting to learn from Christian whalemen, until he saw that Christians were, on the whole, both more miserable and more wicked than all his father's heathens. He was a man who never cringed and never had a creditor. In the days that followed, we became bosom friends and resolved to ship together.
Queequeg, there are three ships crewing up for whaling voyages. This one here, the Titbit. Over there, the black one, Devil Dam. Or there, the Pequod.
You may have seen many a quaint craft in your day, for aught I know. But take my word for it, you never saw such a rare old craft as the Pequod. She was a ship of the old school, seasoned and weather-stained in the typhoons and calms of all four oceans. Her bows looked bearded, her ancient decks worn and wrinkled. But to all her old antiquities were added new and marvelous features. Her open bulwarks were garnished like one continuous jaw with the teeth of the sperm whale. And the thews ran through not blocks of land wood, but sheaves of sea ivory. Scorning a wheel, she sported at her helm a snow-white tiller, carved from the lower jaw of her hereditary foe. A noble craft, but somehow melancholy.
Excuse me, sir. Are you the captain of the Pequod?
Supposing I am. What dost thou want of him?
I was thinking of shipping.
Oh, us, wast thou? Thou art no Nantucketer. Ever been in a stove boat?
No, sir, never been shipwrecked.
Dost know nothing at all of whaling, then?
No, sir, but I've been four voyages in the merchant service, and I
have... A merchant service be damned! It looks a little suspicious, don't it? Hast been a pirate? Didst rob thy last captain?
No. No.
Then what takes thee a whaling? I want to know that before I think of shipping ye.
Well, sir, I want to see the world. I also want to see what whaling is.
He wants to see what whaling is. Have ye clapped eyes on Captain Ahab, lad?
Who's Captain Ahab, sir?
Captain Ahab is the captain of this ship.
I'm mistaken, then. I thought I was speaking to the captain.
Thou art speaking to Captain Peleg. It belongs to me to see the Pequod fitted out for the voyage and supplied with all her needs, including crew. Captain Ahab is at present sick and keeps inside his house. But if thou wants to know what whaling is, clap eye on Ahab, young man, and thou'lt find that he has only one leg.
Was the other one lost by a whale?
Come nearer to me, young man. It was devoured, chewed up, crunched by the most monstrous parmacetti that ever chipped a boat.
Oh, well, what you say is no doubt true enough.
Then let us understand each other. I have given thee a hint about what whaling is. Do ye yet feel inclined to it?
I do, sir.
Art thou the man to pitch a harpoon down a live whale's throat and then jump after it? Answer, quick!
If it should be positively indispensable to do so, then I am.
So Queequeg and I signed our lives away for the next 3 years, and were turned loose to wait out the time until the Pequod was ready to sail. I found my way, as every sailor does, to the whaleman's chapel. The walls of that austere place were lined with black-bordered tablets. There were many. John Talbot, aged 18, lost overboard near the Isle of Desolation. Captain Ezekiel Hardy, killed by a sperm whale in the bows of his boat off the coast of Japan. Others were lost at sea, still more, presumed drowned. And all in the loneliest, most far-flung corners of the globe.
I never saw two steaks disappear so fast. More, gentlemen?
Aye, more.
I tell you, Queequeg, reading those tablets in church this morning made me shiver. I said to myself, Ishmael, that same fate may be thine.
What of it?
Yes, indeed, what of it?
We'll make a whale man of you yet. Have another drink.
In fact, I suppose whaling offers excellent chances for promotion.
How so, Ishmael?
Well, a stove boat would make us immortals.
Immortals? Yes.
We would be gods.
But the next morning, I felt more a ghost than a god. Before dawn, Queequeg and I shouldered our bags and left the inn for the last time. Fog shrouded the island. The town was silent and deserted. And yet, as we arrived at the harbor, I thought I saw four or five shadowy figures dart through the mist towards our ship.
Did you see that, Queequeg? Over there.
No, no one there. Too early, Ishmael.
You're right. My eyes deceive me in this mist.
Avast, shipmate! Have you shipped in that ship? Have you signed on to her?
You mean the Pequod? What of it?
Anything down there about your souls?
What?
Well, perhaps you haven't got any. No matter. I know many chaps of heaven. They're all the better for it. A soul's a sort of fifth wheel to a wagon, ain't it?
What are you jabbering about?
You haven't seen him yet, have you? Old Ahab? Captain Ahab, I mean? You haven't seen him?
No, he's been sick, but we'll be all right again before long.
Ha! All right, before long. Looky, Captain Ahab will be all right again when this dump of mine grows back, and not before. You don't know about that thing that happened to him off Cape Horn when he was struck by lightning and lay like the dead for 3 days and nights? Nothing about the deadly scrimmage afore the altar in Santa? Nothing about the silver calabash he sped into? No, I didn't think you did. How could ye?
What this gibberish of yours is about, I don't know. And I don't much care. It is the easiest thing in the world for a man to look as if he had a great secret in him.
Ah, well, ye've shipped. Names down on papers. What's signed is signed, and what's to be will be, and then again perhaps it won't be after all.
he's cracked, Queequeg. Come on.
Didn't you see anything that looked like man going towards the ship a while ago?
I thought I did, but it was too dim to be sure.
Very dim. Very dim. See if you can find him aboard, will you?
Why?
Morning to ye. Morning to ye. Oh, when you get there, tell him Elijah's decided not to make one of them.
Enough talk. We go. Come, Ishmael.
When we boarded the Pequod, it was as silent as the grave. Not a soul to be seen. The figures I saw must have been phantoms of the fog and my imagination. It was another hour before the crew began to come aboard, red-eyed and stinking from the night before.
Who be ye, boys?
Shipmen. I'm Ishmael. This is Queequeg.
Aye. You'll be the harpooner I've heard tell of.
Who be you?
Darchy.
When does she sail?
Today, I suppose. The captain came aboard last night.
What captain? Ahab.
Who but him, indeed?
Aye, aye. We'll be off by the noon tide.
That's Starbuck. A lively first mate, that. A good man and pious.
All alive now! Ye sons of battlers! Man the capstan, damn ye!
And that's Stubb, not Sir Pious.
Spring there! Aft here! Look lively, men! Is that the way they heave in the merchant service? All aft! Spring, green pants! What's your name?
Ishmael, sir.
Well, Ishmael, clap onto that shroud. You're not here for your health.
And so, on a short, cold Christmas day, we glided into the wintry ocean, whose freezing spray cased us in ice, as in a glassy armor. I scrubbed decks and hauled on shrouds and climbed the masts. I was part of the machinery of the ship, but I had no say in its fate. The driving force of this story, the hand at its tiller, was not mine. I was a cog, a watcher, a listener, but of no more consequence to that world than a seaborne ghost.
Archie, tell me, what are the mates like?
Well, you've heard him shout. Starbuck is a good man. Quaker, Nantucket-born. Says he'll have no man in his boat who ain't afraid of a whale. And you, Queequeg, you're his harpooner. You'll be right enough with him. He's no crusader after perils.
And the others?
Second mate, Mr. Stubb. He's all right. More bark than bite. He's been whaling for 30 years or more. For him, the prow of a whaleboat is like an easy chair. His harpooner is Tash Tago from Gay Head. His ancestors hunted the moose, now he hunts the whale. Third mate, the little fair-headed mannequin, is called Flask. His harpooner is Dagoo, the big fella. Another heathen like Queequeg here, only from Africa someplace.
There don't seem to be many Americans in the crew, as opposed to officers, I mean.
No, I think you're the only one. Well, I suppose Tash Tago is an American. In fact, more of an American than you'll ever be. But the crew? No, the crew are islanders, mostly. Take me. I'm from the Isle of Man. And take Queequeg here. He's from... Where is it you're from, shipmate?
Kokovoko.
Tis an island, I imagine.
Best island in the world.
Then there's those from Canaria. The Azores, of course. And Malta. And Sicily. Even Tash Tago is from Martha's Vineyard, what's an island. Just you, then, from a big, massy continent. You and Dagoo.
I'm from Manhattan, Archie. That's an island, too.
Aye, there you are, then. And Stubb. He's from Cape Cod. But that is all but surrounded by the Atlantic Sea, like a head by hair.
What's that?
It's him.
Well, Captain Ahab. Does he go abroad only at night?
Did they tell you that leg of his is carved from whale ivory, from the jawbone of a spermaceti?
The whale that took off his leg?
Nay, that one yet lives.
We saw a whale yesterday. Why didn't we chase him?
That bowhead whale, Ishmael. Bowhead for children to catch. Or English.
Oi. Spermaceti oil is worth 10 times what bowhead's oil's worth. And so it should be. For it's the difference between hunting a rabbit and hunting a lion. For the bowhead has no teeth. And he never took off no man's leg.
Town ho! Town ho! There she blows!
Where away?
3 points of the larboard beam. 3 miles. She blows!
8 bells! Raise top gallant!
Raise top gallant!
Send everybody aft, Mr. Starbuck.
Captain Ahab, sir. There's a whale 3 miles distant.
It is a finback. Bring everybody aft. Mast heads there, come down!
Everybody aft!
What's happening?
Captain say, finback whale. Too fast, can't catch him.
What do you do when you see a sperm whale, Ben?
Sing out for him.
And what do you do next?
Lower away and after him.
And what tune is it you pull to, men?
A dead whale or a stove boat?
We are on the lookout for a white whale. Look, you see this Spanish ounce of gold? It is a $16 piece, Ben. Whosoever of ye raises me a white-headed whale with a wrinkled brow and a crooked jaw, whosoever of ye raises me that white-headed whale with 3 holes punctured in his starboard fluke, lucky, whosoever of ye raises me that same white-headed whale, he shall have this gold ounce. It is a white whale, I say. A white whale. Skin your eyes for him, men. Look sharp. If you see by the bubbles, sing out.
Captain Ahab,
That white whale must be the same that some call Moby Dick.
Do you know the white whale, Dagu?
Does he fantail a little curious before he goes down? And has he a big spout, very bushy?
Does he have many irons in him? All twisty, twisty like
corkscrews. Yes!
I, Queequeg, the harpoons lie all twisted and wrenched in him. Aye, Dagu, his spout is a big one, like a bushel of wheat. And he fantails like a split jib in a squall. Death and devils, men, it is Moby Dick ye have seen.
Captain Ahab, I have heard of Moby Dick. Was it not he that took off thy leg?
Aye, Mr. Starbuck, it was he that dismasted me. Moby Dick that brought me to this dead stump I stand on. It is that accursed whale that raised me. Made a poor pegging lubber of me forever and a day. And I'll chase him round Good Hope, and round the Horn, and round the Norway Maelstrom, and round Perdition's Flames before I give him up. This is what ye have shipped for, men, to chase that white whale until he spouts black blood and rolls fin out. What say ye, men? Will ye splice hands on it? I think ye do look brave.
Aye, a sharp eye for the white wind.
A sharp lance for Moby Dick!
God bless ye, men. The measure, steward! The great measure of brass! Yeah!
That was my first sighting of Captain Ahab. I had heard of the livid white mark that streaked from the roots of his hair down his scorched face, and on, so they said, to the sole of his foot. And I had heard of his barbaric white leg, shining like a bleached skull. But there on the quarterdeck, with one arm hooked around the main shroud, his burning eyes raking the horizon, he looked like a figure petrified by fire. Tempered into a blade, forged for a single purpose.
Mr. Starbuck, what's this long face? Wilt thou not chase the white whale? Art not game for Moby Dick?
I am game for his crooked jaw and for the jaws of death too, Captain Ahab. If it comes in the way of the business, we follow. But I came here to hunt whales, not my commander's vengeance. How many barrels will thy vengeance yield? It will not fetch much in our Nantucket market.
Nantucket market. Let me tell thee, Starbuck, my vengeance will fetch me a great premium here.
Vengeance on a dumb brute that simply smote thee from blindest instinct? To be enraged with a dumb thing, Captain, seems blasphemous.
Talk not to me of blasphemy. I'd strike the sun if it insulted me. Look, man, are not the crew, one and all, with Ahab? Advance, ye mates! Hold up your lances before me. Let me touch the axis. Come, my pagan kinsmen, my valiant harpooners, cut your seizings and draw the poles. Bring your irons here. Now, cant them over. Turn up the socket for a goblet. So!
Now Ahab caused the three mates to cross their lances and grasp the point where the irons met. And then he called the three harpooners and had them unsheath their harpoons and turn them over, whereupon he filled the sockets with grog.
Now, three to three ye stand. Lift the murderous chalices. Drink, ye harpooners, drink and swear, ye men that man the deathful whale boat's bow. God hunt us all if we do not hunt Moby Dick to his death.
Death to Moby Dick!
Death to Moby Dick! Death to Moby Dick!
What think you of our captain's quest, Mr. Stubb?
I don't think, Mr. Starbuck. I do as I am bidden.
I tell you what I think. I am here to kill whales for my living, and not to be killed by them for theirs. I have no fancy for fighting a fish that too much persists in fighting me.
He's a big old bull, by all accounts. I guess his oil's as good as any.
I have a wife and child in Nantucket, and I intend to return to them.
So do we all, Mr. Starbuck.
But this one pointed madness.
Another. Do you hear that? I've heard that noise before.
It must be the rats in the bilges.
Oh, don't tell me that's rats. It's more like... There, again. There.
Seems like noises from the hold. What can it be but rats?
I don't know. Maybe men?
What men would be down in the hold?
I suspect Ahab knows something of it.
Meaning what?
Mr. Starbuck! I want to show you something.
I know not. I told you. I am not paid to think.
Our chart. I have plotted our course. We will soon round the Cape and head for the Seychelles ground, then the Bay of Bengal. We should be here in time for the season on the line, but we do not wait. We head on to the Strait of Sunda and into the China Seas.
What are these marks there?
Those mark where he has been seen, and at what times?
He. You mean the white whale?
I will dog his tracks, Mr. Starbuck. I will haunt him. I will follow him along his roads, and to his feeding grounds, and to all his watery inns and stopping places, and I will find him. You note he has most often been seen here, off Japan. That is where we shall be next year. By summer. Waiting for him with sharpened teeth.
Captain, we cannot spend our entire voyage searching for one fish. He has the whole watery world to swim in. It is madness.
Not madness, Mr. Starbuck. I have made a study of this in the years since we met. I know him, and we will meet him there.
What would our owners say if they could hear you speak thus? They rely on us to bring home a ship full of oil. There are widows and children among them. They depend on us. This ship and crew are not your playthings to serve your private purpose.
Mr. Starbuck, our owners rely on us to kill whales and not hang back. Moby Dick is a whale. I intend to kill him.
You see, boy, there are whales that bear malice, and there are whales that whalers do battle with from one year to the next and escape, that grow old and cunning, as well as devilish.
Archie, is that true?
Him speak truth, Ishmael. Whalers no fish names. I fat New Zealand Tom. He fat whalers for 50 year. And Morkan, lord of Japan, size of island and black like pitch.
I got an iron in Timor Jack before he escaped.
New Bedford whaler kill him, I heard.
New Bedford? Only because he was old and sick.
Surely a whale is but a big fish. A dumb thing.
Maybe. But you stick your dart in a regular whale, he runs away from you in pain and terror, like you would if I stuck a dart in you. But Moby Dick, when struck by desperate hunters, ran away as if in panic, then turned and bore down on them and stove their boats to splinters. And the captain seized up a knife and dashed at him like a duelist and tried with a 6-inch blade to reach the fathom-deep life of the whale. That captain was Ahab. Then it was that Moby Dick reaped away Ahab's leg as a mower a blade of grass. That made him mad. He was a raving lunatic on the voyage home. Such strength in him still that the mates were forced to lace him fast in his hammock.
Surely an accident of the chase, not evil design on the whale's part.
I have seen whales crunch up a boat in their jaws, even turn and ram a ship with its brow, which is a great battering ram 10 feet high.
but he's not truly white. I know whales are black.
White as hill of salt.
Aye, white. A huge old warrior whale with harpoons in him thrown by ancient men.
I've seen whales whose flesh yielded up the strangest stone spearheads, buried deep and long healed over. Where they were thrown, I could not say, nor when. 'Tis time to sleep.
I cannot help but think of that ragged prophet on the wharf at Nantucket. Remember Queequeg?
That was madman. Captain want kill whale. I want kill whale. Don't care what color Ishmael. Black, white, is whale, all same.
There she blows! There! There! She blows! She blows!
Where away?
On the Libyan! A school of them! There goes Luke!
Stand by to larp! 3 points to leeward, Mr. Stubb!
Aye, aye, sir!
It was our first sighting of a pod of whales. The line tubs were fixed in place, the cranes thrust out, and the whale boats swung out over the sea like samphire baskets over high cliffs. Queequeg, Archie, and I, with the rest of the boat crews, hung on to the rail outside the bulwarks, 1 foot poised on the gunwale, ready to spring. Then, from nowhere, came the sound of more running footsteps, and all eyes turned to Ahab, who was suddenly surrounded by 5 dark phantoms, as if formed out of air. Noiselessly quick, the strangers cast loose the tackles of the 4th whaleboat, until now deemed a spare. 4 of the men looked like natives of the Manilas, but the 5th, their leader, was tall and swart. But, strangely crowning this blackness, a glistening turban of white hair was wound and plaited round his head.
All ready there, Fadula!
Ready, my captain!
Lower away, then!
What did I tell you, Mr. Starbuck? There are your rats, if you please.
Must have stowed aboard before we sailed. A sad business, Mr. Starbuck.
The white whale's at the bottom of it, mark ye. Well, it can't be helped. It ain't the white whale today.
What are you looking at? Lower away, damn ya!
All 4 whaleboats were lowered, and as we pulled out from under the lee of the Pequod, Ahab's boat slid ahead, bespeaking how potent a crew was pulling it. Those tigerish creatures of his seemed all steel and whalebone. Like 5 trip hammers, they rose and fell as one. But we all pulled our hearts out.
Pull, my good boys!
Your eyes, men! Ram a skewer through your necks! You have no limbs, but arms! Long and strong, boys! Long and strong!
The whales separated, and the boats drew apart, each choosing its prey. The sky darkened, and a fog stole upon us, the waves mounting. But we rowed on, and we gained. It was wondrous, thrilling. The raw recruit marching into the fever heat of battle cannot feel stranger or stronger emotions than the man who first finds himself pulling into the charmed, churned circle of the hunted whale.
Pull, boys! Break your backs! Here we come! Quick! Oar down! Harpoon ready!
It felt as though the boat struck a ledge. Something rolled and tumbled like an earthquake beneath us. A wave swamped us. A gush of scalding, stinking vapor shot up nearby. And we were half suffocated as we were tossed helter-skelter into the white, curdling water.
Quick!
Here, Ishmael!
All right, men. We're all right. Everyone here? Archie?
Hi, Captain.
Quick!
Yes.
Ishmael?
Hi, sir.
Boat's all right. Just overturned. Sea's calm. We'll lash on. Ship will come along and pick us up. Never fear.
Night fell. We clung to our upturned craft, but there was no sign of the ship. There is an intolerable loneliness to swimming in the ocean out of sight of land. And at night, it is like being suspended in space. Blackness above, blackness below. And in either blackness, who knows what? My hands grafted to the cedar planks like barnacles, in knowledge that this wooden shell was all that held me to the world of men.
Quick! Does this sort of thing happen often?
What?
Ending up in the water. Left. Like this.
Oh, yes.
Pretty often.
You don't stay dry in the fishery, lad. They'll come. They need us. Need Quigpeg's right arm. They'll find us.
Just gotta watch for sharks nibbling your toes.
Oh.
Archie is pulling your leg, Ishmael. Sharks will leave us alone.
Right.
Just as well. We didn't stick that whale, though. All blood would have brung him.
Archie, save your breath, or I'll have you singing it till daybreak.
We spent the whole long night clinging to the boat, keeping each other awake and thus alive, until, in the mists of the next dawn, the Pequod found us, and they hauled us aboard.
Oh, Queequeg. Oh, my dear friend, I thought last night was our last night on this earth. I wanted to say...
Here, lad, drink! Your head's waterlogged.
Mr. Stubb, I think I heard you say, of all the whalemen you ever met, Mr. Starbuck is by far the most careful. I suppose going plump on a flying whale in a foggy squall is the height of prudence.
Certain. I've lowered for whales from a leaking ship in a gale off Cape Horn.
Oh.
On board, my 11th commandment is don't think. And the 12th is sleep when you can. Get below.
I think I will go below and make a draft of my will. Queequeg, you shall be my lawyer, executor, and legatee.
Strangely, once I had made my will, my mind was easier. All the days I should live would be as good as the days that Lazarus lived after his resurrection. I had survived myself. My death and burial were locked up in my chest. I looked around tranquil and contented, like a peaceful ghost sitting snug inside the family vault. There was little time to ponder our mortality, nor to recover from our dip. For that day we ran across the pod again, and Stubb killed a large bull. We towed the carcass back to the ship, with chains moored it stem and stern, and began the business of trying out the whale. Now I wonder, if you landsmen know what lengths are gone to bring you your oil? What dangers are run to bring you light? After risking life and limb to catch the monster, every sailor becomes a butcher, and every ship a shambles, all in the name of enlightenment. The fruits of the whale are, first, his skin or blubber, which is fastened onto with a giant hook and peeled off in a great spiralizing strip, much as you or I would peel an orange. All the while, hundreds of sharks snap at the remains, tearing chunks out of the whale, and chunks out of each other. And even, so voracious is their hunger, chunks out of themselves. The sea about the carcass is churned into a pink and boiling frenzy, and the men working on the whale do well to avoid slipping into it, else they would be scoured to the bone in minutes. This blubber is chopped into lumps, these lumps sliced up into pages, and the resulting fatty books are cooked in the great tryworks amidships until they give up their oil. The shreds of tried-out blubber dry to crisp pieces called fritters, which are used to feed the fire under the trypots. So the whale consumes himself. He is boiled on a fire, fed with his own body. When the blubber has been stripped, a mate has then to perch on the slippery, peeled carcass and, with a spade, sever the body from its infinitely more valuable head, all the while being careful not to spill its precious contents, or chop off his own foot, or throw himself to the sharks. Then the head, all 20-odd feet of it, is hoisted even higher out of the water, and it cants the ship over with its weight, until the deck is an oaken hillside. The bluff-fronted head of the sperm whale is not full of brains, alas for it, and all to the good for you, but of the sweetest oil. The case alone, which is the tank in the upper part of its head, holds 500 gallons of precious spermaceti in its pure, limpid, violet-scented state. There are other marvelous parts to the whale, which all have their uses and wonders. There is white horse, from the tapering part of the fish, a dense mass of muscle that, cut in blocks, looks like Berkshire marble, and yet contains oil. There is plum pudding, pieces of flesh that here and there adhere to the blubber, like a golden cake studded with plums and rubies, crimson and purple. It is extremely hard to keep yourself from slipping behind the mainmast with a piece and tasting it. There is slob galleon, a mysterious, oozy, stringy substance that appears in tubs of cooled spermaceti, and which I take to be the ruptured pearlescent lining of the case. Then there are teeth, to be carved into scrimshander, and bones, to be made into legs and tillers, and nippers, rubbery wedges of the tail, wonderful for cleaning the decks. And very occasionally, but only if you catch an old or blasted or dyspeptic whale, you might find, deep in its bowels, lumps of what looks like ripe, mottled cheese of a color between yellow and ash. You might, thinking of where it has come from, and from the gray, waxy, lumpish look of it, want to leave it alone. But once you smell the intense, spicy perfume, and once you know that its value is a guinea an ounce to any Paris perfumer, why then you will seize up as much of this ambergris as you can possibly carry. But the bulk of the job, you may well be thinking, of butchering the poor whale, is bloody and stinking and hellish, and you'd be right. Smoke from the trypot smells like the left wing of the Day of Judgment. The fires burning night and day are as hot as Satan's hoof. The men stoking and stripping and slicing are matted devils begrimed with oil, blood, and soot. Well might you think that a whale ship, freighted with savages, laden with fire, and burning a corpse, is an argument for the pit.
Hey,
on the starboard bow and bringing down her breeze to us.
It is the Jeroboam out of Nantucket. Captain Mayhew, as is married to my sister's husband's cousin.
Nantucketers, Queequeg, they might have mail. Yes! Mr. Stubb, who's standing next to the captain?
I think that must be the fanatic.
What fanatic?
A Niska Yuna Shaker, that claims to be the Archangel Gabriel.
What's he doing on a whaling ship?
Lord alone knows. He's a heretic and an opium eater.
Art thou coming aboard, Captain Mayhew?
Thank you, I will not. We have a malignant fever aboard.
Think of the fevers! Beware the horrible plague!
Gabriel, please!
Hast thou seen the white whale, Captain?
The white whale? Aye, we have seen it, the more's the pity.
Think of thy whaleboat! Stove sunk! Havoc! Havoc!
This Gabriel was indeed Stubb's fanatic. It seemed, from Captain Mayhew's story, that he had gained a marvelous ascendancy over almost the whole crew, with the effect that he would not work, and the captain could not discipline him, for fear of mass desertion. Gabriel conceived the notion that Moby Dick was no mere whale, but was his Shaker God incarnate, and warned the captain against attacking him. But their first mate, a man called Macy, was keen to be after him. And when they sighted the white whale a year later, he was in the bows, about to hurl his lance, when a broad white shadow rose from the sea. The whale flicked his tail, and the mate was smitten bodily out of the boat. Not a chip of the boat was harmed, nor a hair of any oarsman's head, but the poor mate forever sank.
I foresaw it. I saw the blasphemer's end.
Where did you see him?
Off the Moluccas, half a year ago. You don't intend to hunt him, Captain Ahab?
I do.
Think of the blasphemer, dead and down below the waves. Thou art going to meet him.
Farewell, Captain Ahab. I beg you, seek other prey.
Curses throttle me. What sort of captain lets a lunatic take control of his ship?
Captain Ahab.
Huh? A moment.
What is it, Mr. Starbuck? Art thou affrighted by the ravings of a madman?
No, sir. I haven't had a chance to speak of this before. Hmm? But the men noticed that Fadula and his crew did no work in trying out the whale. All the men were at it night and day, save for them. It don't seem fair, sir.
Is the ship short-handed, Mr. Starbuck?
It ain't that, sir. But the men see them lounging on deck and doing nothing. It is bad for their morale.
We have a full crew to man this ship. We do not need more men.
Then why are they here? They eat the same food. They walk the same boards and...
They have no stake in the getting of oil. They are here to help me alone.
For pity's sake, why?
You once said that this ship and its crew were not my private playthings. These men are.
Great God! The white whale has turned your reason.
Hark ye yet, Stomach. Hark ye. If thou requirest a little lower layer, all worldly objects are pasteboard masks. But in each, some unknown but reasoning thing puts forth the molding of its features from behind the mask. To me, the whale has shown its face. He tasks me. He heaps me. I see in him outrageous strength with inscrutable malice sinewing it. That inscrutable thing is chiefly what I hate. And I will wreak that hate upon him.
Captain, you talk as though the whale were the devil himself.
It was happen chance what took your leg off.
And you talk like a godless man, Mr. Starbuck. Have you never seen the devil show his face?
You are too subtle for me. Will you tell your boat crew to do whaler's work?
Enough! Be gone, Starbuck.
What would the owners say to this?
Let the owners stand on Nantucket Beach and out-yell the typhoons. The only real owner of anything is its commander.
Captain Ahab, a better man than me might well pass over in thee what he would resent in a younger man, aye, and a happier one.
Dost thou so much as dare to critically think of me? On deck!
Nay, sir, I do dare, but to say to
thee... maybe this will temper your daring.
Captain!
I always keep it loaded, Mr. Starbuck. Remember this. There is one God that is Lord over the earth, and one Captain that is Lord over the Pequot.
Sir, I ask thee not to beware of Starbuck. Thou wouldst but laugh. But let Ahab beware of Ahab. Beware of thyself, old man!
Thou art too good a fellow, Starbuck.
So, Ishmael, there is the Indian Ocean ahead of us, and the sun behind us. We've had a charmed sailing of it.
Oh, to be sure. What chances will stop in Madagascar?
With the old man? None at all, lad. You must know that by now.
There she blows! She blows!
It's that spout again. Tall and silver. The same one as the other night, if I'm not mistaken.
Top gallants and royals! Archie to the helm! Don't lose it!
Aye, aye, sir!
She blows!
Look, Fedula jump up mast like a rat. Do not think him, old man. He thinks white whale.
Do you think he really knows?
The same spout as before, by moonlight.
The same spout? How can you tell?
Same I know Ishmael face.
Is it Moby Dick?
Perhaps.
You hope it is, don't you?
We won't find him tonight. Too far. Look. He's gone. Gone.
Again and again we spotted that ghostly spout. Always tall and silver. Always straight ahead. Always too far away to catch. As if it were drawing us further and deeper into the unknown.
Remember the ounce of gold, men. The ounce of gold awaits he who raises me, Moby Dick. What say you, men? Are you brave?
Aye!
What is your oath?
Death to Moby Dick!
God keep me. God keep us all.
Death to Moby Dick. I, Ishmael, was one of that crew. My shouts went up with the rest. My oath welded with theirs. And the stronger I shouted, and the more did I clinch my oath, because of the dread in my soul.
In episode 1 of Moby Dick, Ahab was played by Garrick Hagen, Older Ishmael by Trevor White, and Young Ishmael by PJ Brennan. Starbuck was played by Richard Lang, Queequeg by Sani Muliama Seyali'i, Archie by Adam Redmayne, Stub by Simon Lee Phillips, and Dagu by Cobner Holbrook Smith. Peter Coffin was played by Howell Evans, Captain Peleg by Mark Meadows, and Elijah by Dorian Thomas. The music was composed by Stuart Gordon. Moby Dick, by Herman Melville, was adapted for radio by Steph Penny. It was a BBC Cymru Wales production, directed by Kate McCall.
Well, do not miss the second half tomorrow for the terrifying climax of Moby Dick. And the whale, well, he's not happy.
Hello, I'm Justin Edwards, and I've got news about the autumn 2013 series of Four Extra's very own up-to-the-minute news-based comedy show, which, due to a bit of a mess-up on the rotor, we had to record in 1955. Still, it does mean we can play you this teaser clip.
What's for tea, dear?
Sardines on toast pills, followed by tapioca pudding pills. Only it'll be late because the robot's had an accident.
Had an accident?
Yes, got its probe stuck in the phone dial. Ended up having an art-to-art with a speaking clock.
Newsjack on BBC Radio 4 Extra starts on Thursday night at 10:30. For details of how to get involved, just visit the Radio 4 Extra homepage.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Hopefully your night shift is flying by this morning. 4 o'clock, Wes Butters with a short story next, and then more drama to come in 15 minutes, with Jim Norton and Emma Fielding starring in the haunting tale of Catherine. She's a desperate woman who spends her time standing at her front door, watching and waiting for a stranger to pass by. You'll find out why on 4 Extra in Mustard Seed in 15 minutes. Now, today's I Was There 2 story. A 97-year-old American academic relates her memories of the night of the Roswell incident in New Mexico in 1947, when the US government allegedly covered up an encounter with aliens. Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio reads Nothing But Blue Skies by Dominic Power.
Back then, we worried about stuff falling from the sky. Atom bombs, mostly. It was more than 2 years since President Harry Truman dropped the big one on Japan and the country lost its innocence. You were asking me about Roswell. I remember at the time there were some people who thought it was some kind of nuclear test that had gone wrong. In those days, people didn't get so mad about that kind of thing. They figured the government knew best, just like they figured it was okay for Harry Truman to give the order to wipe out Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Linda, I guess you're wondering why I'm making you this recording since I flat refused to tell you anything when you drove here from Albuquerque last March. The thing is, you never told me how you knew I was there when that thing fell from the sky. That intrigued me. And you are a smart girl, so I liked you, in spite of you invading my privacy. I enjoyed the idea for your book, too. The Politics of Mass Hallucination is a good title, and if I'm still alive when it comes out, I'd surely like to read it. When I said last March that I couldn't help you about Roswell, I wasn't telling the truth. I was there, and I did witness some of what happened. But I've never wanted to talk about it. I've seen the movies and read some of the books, and I've watched how the folks who say they saw it have been changed. And I didn't want that to happen to me. But lately I've been feeling differently about things. At my age, I figure I'm not going to be here much longer. I'll be the last of the Rudds in Chavez County, and I want to leave some sort of record. Being the last of the Rudds might not seem like a big thing to you, but there's been Rudds in Chavez County since 1840. My grandfather, Edward D. Rudd, ran for sheriff of Chavez County against Pat Garrett in 1889, which was after Garrett gunned down Billy the Kid. When I was little, Granddaddy used to tell me that Pat Garrett was a scoundrel and everybody knew that the kid didn't have a weapon, so you might say it was as good as murder. I tell my boy Cole about the Rudds that have gone. I don't know if he understands, but he smiles as if he likes the way the words sound. I thought maybe I should make a formal declaration. I'd say, my name is Catherine Rudd. I'm 97 years old. This is my statement about the events that took place in the vicinity of Roswell in Chavez County, New Mexico, on the morning of July 5th in the year of our Lord, 1947. I made a couple of starts like that, but it got me all tangled up. So I'm just going to tell it my way, talking to you by way of this tape recorder. Cole's just brought me a glass of iced tea. Same as he does every day about this time. Looking out for me like he's always done. But we both know things are changing. And so I guess it's time to put everything in order. Before I decided to send you this recording, I wanted to find out about you. Cole drove me over to the library at Hagerman, and I looked you up on the internet machine they've got there. Linda Rosales, associate professor at the University of New Mexico. In 1947, I was 35 years old, writing a book on Pueblo tribal ceremonies and lecturing in the anthropology department. It looked like I had a good career ahead of me. But then I met Porter Reed, and falling in love with him was the biggest mistake of my life.